Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Random Chatter. We have a lot of stuff to talk about this week, a lot of things that we have watched and have not yet gotten to talk about. So we are going to be coming at you with some new releases, some new series that just started up, at least one finale of an ending series, and much more. I'm Eric, and I'm here tonight with Lou and Tim. Lou, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. Glad to be back. It's been a while since I've recorded with you guys.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's always the hard part about the summer months. Lots of things going on. And yeah. Tim, I know you've been busy recently too, huh? How are you doing?
Good. I have been busy. A lot of work stuff. I gained a daughter-in-law over this past weekend.
Wow. And, I mean, I put on some pounds, but I haven't gained like a whole person. Jeez, dude, if you need some help working out or something, I'm no expert, but I'll help you out. Wow. Yep. Well, congratulations. Yep. That's cool.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a great wedding. I actually presided over the wedding.
Oh my gosh.
And lots of fun.
How did that, you should have recorded that for a show.
Should have.
Yeah. Should have.
Yeah.
I can imagine the outtakes.
It went really well. It went really well. People good. Liked it. I got lots of compliments. It was fun. It was a good time.
That's
it was
awesome.
The only wedding that I know I've ever been to where the word vomit was used in the ceremony, not once, but twice.
Was it in the vows?
It was once by me, and it was done once by the bride in her vows.
I'm impressed. I already liked the two of them. I like her even more now.
Yeah.
That is very awesome.
Yep.
Nice.
So,
all right.
Good stuff.
So we have quite a bit to catch up on. It's been a while since we've done a review show. And there have been some pretty big reviews come out recently, or some pretty big projects, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So I know not all of us have seen all of these things. So we're going to kind of try to hit them as we can here. Let's talk about the one I'm guessing all three of us have seen. And that is the first episode of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. Now, Tim, I'm sure you've talked about this on Guardians of the MCU. Yes?
Yeah. In fact, Sheba and I just finished an episode of Guardians of the MCU just prior to jumping onto this show with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave some remarks there, but her and John also did an episode of MCU TV fully talking about the premiere, and that should be up, I think, tomorrow. I'm like ecstatic with it. I thought it was flawless. I loved it. I liked the comedy. It really was. I had no complaints about it. I don't think that there's anything that they could have improved with it. I love the story. I love what they did with it. It was funny. It was fantastic. It was really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Lou.
Yes.
What did you think of She-Hulk?
I saw She-Hulk. Yeah.
Did you see She-Hulk?
I don't think it was flawless. It was good. I mean, okay. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it.
Okay. You reacted in such a way. I'm thinking, ooh, this might be a little throwdown here.
It's not going to be a throwdown. Okay. I enjoyed it. I mean, there's been a lot of people I've talked to at work and so forth that really didn't care for it.
Really? And why is that?
I think it has to do with a lot of the characterization of the Hulk. If you don't like the direction they brought the Hulk in, you know, with Smart Hulk, and there's not really that differentiation, then this becomes extension of that. That's like, I don't really want to watch that.
Yeah.
At least people I've talked to, at least. But I think Tim's right. The comedy worked really well. I was a bit shocked in the first, sequence there, and they mention, the Hulk, and I'm like, wait, what? People know about? Wait, did I miss an episode? What happened here? It seems like it started abruptly. It was like, oh wait, now they're going back and doing the whole, Deadpool talking to the audience thing, and
yeah. So for those who don't know and only saw for the first time in Avengers Endgame, the combined Hulk or the Smart Hulk, where Bruce Banner and the Hulk's personalities have merged, that's actually been around for a long time. That was from comic book writer Peter David, and I want to say it was in the late 80s, if I recall correctly. I didn't really start picking up Peter David stuff until the early 90s, but he used to write for X Factor and a couple of other titles, and he was the one responsible for bringing the Smart Hulk into the comics. So this is not a new thing. This has been around for 3 decades.
But I think that for people that haven't done the comics, and right. I don't digest the comics as much as you guys have, but if you don't do that, and this is brand new to you, it's a little off-putting sometimes. I think some people didn't expect that to happen the way it did, and maybe it's not what they wanted to see going forward. So
yeah, I can understand that. It is a bit of a departure from the traditional Hulk that a lot of people know. So
because I don't think it feels to me like we didn't get to see a lot of the Hulk as what we knew the Hulk was. You know,
what I like about it is, so with the fact that it is very difficult for them to do any standalone Hulk movies, and it has to do with licensing and Universal Studios owning the actual movie rights to the character if they do a solo movie and that kind of stuff. If Hulk had his own movies, I think that they could really give us more of that. So I think absent that, they're just having to kind of weave his story throughout other people's movies and you know, ensemble movies. And I think it just makes the writing easier versus having Raging Hulk and Bruce Banner. From a literary perspective, and when you only have a certain amount of time in a movie, to not be bouncing back and forth between the two, it's like, ah, screw it, we're just going to put them together.
Right.
I think it just makes things, some might say it's lazy, but when you do think about the constraints of a movie, primarily with him being in movies, like it works better. I think it just works.
Have you heard anything, Tim? I don't want to get into too much of a rabbit hole, but have you heard about the rumors of Universal and Marvel Studios striking a deal about distribution on
upcoming movie? I've heard some back and forth on it, and at this point I'm not quite sure what to believe, and I've heard some things over the last few years. I don't know. It's at the point now, obviously they're getting great mileage out of him, and between Hulk and Thor, they are the longest lasting characters right now in the MCU. But I don't know that they want to get that much more longevity out of Hulk. If they want to do something like a World War Hulk, something like that, then yes, absolutely.
That's exactly what they're talking about.
Build it out and do what you want to do with it. If they're not going to go that direction, let him fade off into the sunset.
So the ship that shows up at the beginning of the episode, not to spoil anything, it was in one of the TV spots. It's not a spoiler. Bruce identifies what he believes that to be.
Yeah. Sicarian messenger ship.
Right. And that they are probably looking for him. And the rumor is, this is rumor, this is speculation, this is not a leak, this is speculation. And it seems to make sense that they are coming to notify him about his son. And again, this is another callback to the comic books. His son, Scar, who is apparently what is making people believe that they're going to go into the World War Hulk storyline.
So basically, Hulk had some action on Sakaar while he was gladiatorializing. And
From Thor Ragnarok, for those who...
I feel bad for the mother, because that whole process...
Depends on what alien race she was.
I was gonna, you don't know what she looks like.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, we're going to move on from She-Hulk. To throw in my two cents, I liked it a lot. I was disappointed they didn't do two episodes at once, because I really do feel like the first episode was so much setting the framework that we didn't really get to the story yet, which was to be expected. I mean, that's perfectly normal. That's what you do with the first 30 minutes. It's just, that's why I like it when they do the first two episodes. You get that first episode where it's laying the groundwork, and then you actually get to dip your foot in the pool of the story a little bit. And we know that's coming here as of this recording in a couple of days with the second episode, and that's fine. It's not a complaint. It would have been nice. I'm looking forward to seeing where the story goes. I know a little bit for behind the scenes, but
and for, of course, we should give a pro tip that if you watch it, stick around for the end credit scene. There is one. Not all the Marvel TV stuff has been in them. So
yeah. Right, a lot of them have been doing like one thing per season. So it's been confusing. Yeah. But this one definitely has a cute little thing at the end that you should stick around for.
It's worth seeing. Yeah.
It is fantastic.
So House of the Dragon just came out, I think, yesterday.
Sunday. Yep.
Have either of you watched it?
I did.
I started it. I have not finished it.
Okay. Are both of you, now again, I know the last season had issues, but are either of you otherwise Game of Thrones fans?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I am as well. I tolerated the last season, tried to accept it for what it was, because I think the entire series as a whole is really good. House of the Dragon premiered last night with an hour-long premiere episode starring most notably Matt Smith.
Is weird.
He's one of the doctors playing a bad guy and doing it really well.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic actor. Yeah. But seeing him in that role, I'm like, I just can't get by him as, it's like I got to almost close my eyes because he's a good actor, but I keep wanting to see him.
Because it hurts.
As the doctor.
Yeah. I mean, he was my first doctor, and now seeing him as this is harsh. That was an intense episode.
I haven't finished it, but yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it.
The dismemberments and decapitations were pretty fantastic.
The interspersing,
some of that.
The jousting tournament getting
that
out
was
of hand
also,
with the childbirth alternating back and forth in the cuts with that.
Great directing.
Very good directing.
Yeah. Yeah. The directing and the editing on that was fantastic because, just this juxtaposition of like violence in the miracle of life also marred by death, and done really, really well. Very disturbing, but done very, very well.
So are you guys sold?
I think they set things up very well with this episode. I liked what they did with it. It has largely all the things from Game of Thrones that people like traditionally. It's got violence, it has orgies, it has dragons. Is there anything else that people want? I don't know. I don't think so.
But it wasn't about what I liked about this episode in that regard was that it wasn't about those things. Those things were part of the storytelling. It was like, you mentioned the big drunken parties and stuff like that, but the main character wasn't engaged in all that. He was detached. He was bothered. And it really focused on the fact that he couldn't revel in all of the, and the party was about him, and he still couldn't connect to it. And that's part of the storytelling of that character. And then the tournament and all of that kind of stuff. So it wasn't just fight scenes. It wasn't just, blood and gore and gratuitous stuff thrown in there to say, hey, I'm on HBO, not Disney Plus. And like it was
right.
It was stuff that led into the story. And I think that there were a lot of problems with especially the first couple of seasons with Game of Thrones, where it felt like you had a really good story and then they kept injecting gratuitous stuff for the sake of being gratuitous. Sometimes.
Well, I think they've established a fan base now and they kind of know what they are, so they can do what they want to do and not do things only for shock value to get viewers.
True. They don't have to prove anything
viewers.
Anymore.
Right.
In fact, they probably have to prove more with story now than they do the other way around.
Yeah, maybe. And I watched about 20 minutes of it, I guess, at lunch today at work and on my iPad. And I'm like, I need to rewatch this at home on a big screen. Yeah. See it.
Definitely.
And get the detail. And
I need to shut it off before my HR department sees what's on the screen.
I was alone in the break room.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, no, it definitely works, and it does take all those elements that we liked of Game of Thrones. Of course, it's one of those things where I think almost being spoiled by Game of Thrones that we got so connected to a handful of the characters in Game of Thrones Whether you loved them or you hated them, you still had this this incredible connection. And so now you're in this universe of Game of Thrones. It's set 175 years before the birth of Daenerys, I believe. And so obviously we're not familiar with any of the characters there, but we are familiar with the environment.
So and the families.
Yeah, we're familiar with the families. Right. We're in King's Landing. There's, you know, so the constructs of things and all that stuff we're very familiar with. And there's this yearning that I had, that I know that I felt in watching it. Like, I need a favorite character. I need a character that I'm going to, like, grab onto. And it's just starting. So, like, we're just being introduced to these characters. See, like, you don't know who it's going to be. For me, I know it's not going to be Matt Smith's character because I've never liked Matt Smith. No offense to Matt Smith.
Oh, Tim.
Never liked him. Never liked him as a doctor.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, I cannot describe to you how fired you are.
Yeah, I'm just simply not a fan. Although that said, I appreciate what his character brought to this, like lots and lots of gravity. And with basically how this episode ended, I'm expecting total and complete wanton destruction to be rained down from this man, like very, very soon. But yeah, it really interested. So like, you're just kind of figuring out the dynamics of the people because you're compelled to like, oh, that's my character. That's my character. You know, like we got with Game of Thrones. So I'm excited
to get that in Game of Thrones. Did we? I mean, I'm trying to think back to when I first watched that.
First every episode, character you started to like in Game of Thrones got killed.
Well, yeah. But it was almost a mystery to figure out who the good characters were.
True.
But we got to learn these characters. We got to get into them. We know the story. We know the families. We got to know the people now.
I will say that after reading a couple of articles, might have been Entertainment Weekly was the one I was reading, where they gave you like a kind of a brief introduction to the different characters, and I realized, ooh, there are things about these characters we haven't seen yet. There are characters we're becoming comfortable with already that we shouldn't be necessarily. and I'm not going to spoil anything more about it than that, but I truly believe it's one of those situations where we are going to see complete misdirects probably on every single character.
Yeah.
Or just about. So,
and this is one of those shows that's released weekly, so we have a weekly talking point now. Mm-hmm. And you'll get it slowly and can digest this and learn the characters and get to it slowly. So.
Yep. Yeah, we'll start a new podcast on it, and they'll release three episodes, and so we'll do three episodes of the podcast and have to wait another year. Yeah. It's good, though. I think that it redeems the franchise after what happened with the final season of Game of Thrones, where they kind of rushed through the storytelling way, way, way too fast.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's still people worried about, oh, I'm going to get through six seasons of this, too, and then all of a sudden get dumped on my butt. So, but so far, so good. I think that this is holding up really well. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Have either of you watched The Sandman?
No. Not.
Okay, so this is probably the next most recent release on our list. Neil Gaiman wrote one of the most popular and famous and most heavily award-winning comic book series that does not directly involve traditional superheroes. This was back, again, I think late 80s, early 90s, and it's called The Sandman, and it was on an imprint of DC Comics called Vertigo. So they were focused on more, when I say adult, I mean more grown-up, intellectually mature sorts of storylines. They had more kind of adult themes and things like that. Not for kids in the sense, not so much the violence and stuff, but just the types of content it covered.
Yeah.
Sandman was one of several Vertigo titles. It was absolutely the most popular one. A lot of like watercolor type artwork, brilliantly done. It still has a major fan following to this day. And they've tried to bring it to screen in iterations before. There's an audiobook series, like a radio drama series on Audible. I think they've done two parts so far, but it just hit Netflix a few weeks back. And I am maybe two or three episodes into it. It focuses on the main characters, Morpheus, who is the king of dreams, and he has different siblings like Death, Destiny, Despair, etc. And it's kind of the blending of the dream world with the real world and all kinds of just strange things going on. So really, really good series. And incredible production value. The writing is great. The casting is great. One of those shows that it helps if you can kind of focus on it, not because it's confusing, but because it's so rich in design and subtle in the characters and nuanced. You're not going to want to, you know, sit and play games on your phone while you're watching this one. But I would highly recommend it. It is a classic for a reason. And I can say that while I am not an expert on the original content at all, it truly feels like this series has done the content justice. And Neil Gaiman is directly involved with the production of this. So it has his blessing. And he seems very proud of how it's turned out. So I would say it's worth going out of your way to watch.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. I've only been loosely familiar with the comic book, just simply because it is a classic. But, you know, I only generally know about kind of the story, but that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've not actually read the comic. I've seen pages here and there, and I know the basic story, but I've never read it. But this makes me interested maybe in going back and checking it out. It's a really good series.
Good.
So one other thing that came out recently that is part of an existing franchise, our next most recent release, I think, is one I did not see. Did you guys see Prey?
Oh, yes,
I have.
Both of you did? All right. Lou, you haven't spoken most recently of the three of us. Tell us about Prey.
You know, Prey was the latest addition in the Predator series. And, you know, movie format, it's not a series. It's just a single one-off movie. And from the trailers we had back, we probably got them, 6 months ago, I was a little ambivalent towards it. I was like, yeah, okay, another Predator thing, whatever. It'll be what it is. I mean, they haven't been fantastic as of late, I guess you'd say. So I didn't have a lot of high expectations. If I had to have one complaint about this, I would say it feels very derivative of the first one in terms of how the storyline, the beats, the story hit, that kind of stuff. But execution wise, it was fantastic. I enjoyed the action they gave us. I enjoyed the character development they had. It was a different time frame, a different setting for the Predator. It was back to the storytelling concept of not showing the Predator all that much.
Okay, but, and it was set like 200 years in the past or something? Native Americans?
Yeah, I remember the time was. It was Native Americans. It was set, you know, pre what we know of the universe today with predators. And, you know, they come to our world to hunt. And it had it felt, the main character in this one, I can't remember the actress's name now, but the female lead, she felt very much like the female that was in the first one, that was the prisoner, I guess, to the group there, or the one they rescued, that was the prisoner, I guess, from the first
show
that was taken out. And not the same character at all, because she wasn't a main focus, you know, Arnie was, but a lot of the same beats with her felt very true to this one, but this character did the work. She put in the time and did the stuff.
Yeah.
But that's where I kind of get that similarity between the two stories.
Okay. Tim, what'd you think of it?
I knew it was coming out. I was expecting it. I was waiting for it. I forgot when it was coming out. I got a message from Tom like the day it dropped, saying that it is his second favorite Predator film after the first one. And so then that night we watched it, and I was really, really freaking impressed with it. I think a lot of the stuff that Lou says is very true. It had a lot of derivation of the first movie, but then quite honestly, I mean, that is the essence of the Predator. That's the Predator is out there hunting species. So you're going to have, it's all about a hunt. I think, unfortunately, the Alien versus Predator movies were crap. Like they are not what we wanted them to be when we were fans of Alien and Predator in the 80s.
You mean good.
Oh my God, wouldn't it be so cool if we took this character and put them in a movie and they fought each other?
Yeah.
Well, no, so far the execution on that has sucked.
Yeah.
So going back to a Predator in this, I think it was great. And I actually agree with Tom, second best Predator movie in the franchise.
Which isn't hard to do.
Yeah.
The second Predator movie wasn't, for its time, it wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't terrible.
The one with Danny Glover.
Yeah, and it's actually still totally rewatchable. I mean, I've liked the second Predator movie for a long time.
Yeah,
I remember being good, but you know,
it was okay.
That was our first glimpse of inside their ship and seeing other trophies he had. Oh my God, this could be amazing.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Then it wasn't. So
the tagline of it was something like hunting in the urban jungle or something like that, because it was set in LA. And
it was LA? I thought it was Detroit or something. I thought it was like. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But it was it was I really did like the second Predator movie, and I think this one definitely outdoes it.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
The effects were good. I like that they also we got a different Predator, but some of the aspects of the Predator were different. You had some different armor, you had some slightly different technologies, some different armaments, that kind of thing. So we weren't just getting this cookie cutter, oh, all the Predators are the same kind of thing. We weren't getting that.
Right.
Which I really liked. And it was cool. It was very cool.
Okay.
And I did like that they went back to, you know, like from the first Predator movie, where really it was toward the end of the second act where we finally got the Predator revealed without his... Mm-hmm. Camo technology, and we basically got that same thing in this movie too. We were well into the second act before we got that reveal.
I'm gonna have to watch and see what I think about that, because I guess
I think it's worth giving a watch.
Yeah, everybody seems to like it. I haven't heard any really bad things about it yet, and
although I still have to question, if you have that technology as the Predator, or you know, you're basically seeing thermal imaging, you shouldn't be able to lose.
Isn't that cheating?
I mean,
right? Is it really that challenging?
I mean, true.
Because I'm looking at that. There's one scene. It was in the trailer. The one scene in the trailer where she runs out of the woods into the field of whatever.
Tall grass.
Grasses. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and they're crouching down, and I'm like, well, that's not going to do you any good.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
This, by the way, Hulu's biggest release ever. This is amongst any other movies that they've had, any other series, including, you know, Handmaid's Tale season premieres, all that kind of stuff. This has destroyed every record that Hulu, any of Hulu's internal records. So,
yeah, the word of mouth has been good, and it's getting traction.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about them not revealing the Predator until late in the movie. I see how that worked with the first one, but now, like, we don't need that tease anymore. We've seen what Predators look like. It's like,
well, but
I don't know.
But in the world, the people who the Predator is hunting don't.
Okay. And all right.
So it's more for them than it is for the viewer.
Okay. All right, I'll buy that. All right, moving on. A movie that came out recently on Netflix, actually a few weeks ago, and we just have not yet had a chance to cover it. And that is The Gray Man. So we've got Ryan Gosling and, who is it, Ana de Armas reuniting. Mm-hmm. They were both in Blade Runner 2049 together, a movie which I loved, by the way.
And Ana de Armas reuniting with Chris Evans. They were together in Knives Out.
Yep. And Chris Evans, of course, from the MCU.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, he's had a couple bit roles. He played the guy that turns into flames.
Guy. Yeah.
The fire guy.
Oh, Human Torch. Yeah, from that movie, that Fantastic Four movie from a long time ago. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is... I thought this was pretty good. I heard a couple of complaints about this movie, and it kind of surprised me a little bit. I thought it had a pretty good plot to it. I thought the action scenes were very well choreographed. I thought the production value was good. I thought the acting was good. And I felt like it was a lot of fun. It was very much kind of an espionage, quite spy James thriller. Bond, Jason Bourne sort of spy thriller. Yeah. But it took a different spin on it. And it was very much a protagonist who's really good at what he does versus an antagonist who's not merely like, you know, the Lex Luthor. Like we often see, if I feel like in James Bond movies, we see the mastermind villain and it's different. This was very much like the main character was being actively hunted by.
Oh, yeah.
Like mercenary, bounty hunter, like top of the line characters.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was fun. I really liked this movie.
I really did too.
A lot of substance to it. Now Lou, you did not see this one, right?
I have not seen it. No. And I've heard mixed things from everybody I've talked to about this. Some people thought it was great. So were like, yeah, the dialogue is pretty poor and the story really wasn't there, and I don't know, so I'm hearing everything.
You need to show them what was the gun, was it Gunpowder Milkshake? You need to show Lou, you and I have watched a list of Netflix action movies. For
I like that, I wouldn't make people watch that movie. Okay, come on.
I was gonna say, between movie chatter and media chatter, we've seen a lot of movies like this that did not come anywhere near being this good.
I mean, this is no Captain America World Police thing or whatever it was there, but it's
yeah, no. We don't have those like powerful speeches in there.
No.
Oh, that speech was good, Lou. You liked it. I know you did. You admitted it. It's okay.
So, it basically enough, the tomato meter on this is 46% for the
audience. Are you serious?
90% for the audience score. So, a big variation between the two readings.
But interesting.
The tomato meter is at 46% with 251 reviews.
I mean, I guess I could pick up on some stuff that I guess critics wouldn't really like, but I, from a just simply a fan perspective, it was a fun movie. I thought the story moved really well. I thought it had really interesting elements. I thought the cast was fantastic. You had Chris Evans with a porn stash, and he was a character that you love to hate.
not a stash of porn, a mustache. that a
porn stash
is reminiscent of the stereotypical 1970s. Yeah, I just want to clarify, we're not talking about a stash of pornography. Okay. Got to be careful with the wording there, Tim.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Gosling, I think hit it really great as, the movie's action hero. Yeah. I love Ana de Armas. I think she is, she's an incredibly versatile actress.
She really is. What was the movie she did with, was it Moneyball?
Yeah.
She couldn't speak English in that movie.
She was learning English for the movie,
They asked her to change some lines, and she just kind of politely nodded and said, okay, and she recited the same lines again, and it took the directors a while to realize, she just memorized, like, how to say the words.
She is,
which is like, impressive.
She does a lot of her own fights and stunt work.
Yeah.
She's funny. She has really good comedic timing on stuff.
She really does.
She's great. So, I mean, just... between her, Chris Evans, and Ryan Gosling, the three of them were just fantastic. I mean, they were the pillars of this movie, and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
I have to say, like, I was joking around a minute ago, but looking back at a lot of these types of movies that have been on Netflix, I would say this is better than even some of the others I've liked. Like, I've seen a lot that I didn't like. I've seen some that I liked pretty well but weren't great. Six Underground, I thought was a lot of fun. I don't know that it was good, but it was fun.
Yeah.
I would say this one was good. Like, it's...
So you think this is better than Six Underground?
To me, Six Underground was fun because it had a 20-minute long, hilarious car chase scene at the beginning of the movie. Best car chase scene in a film ever. And it had Ryan Reynolds. So yeah. almost immediate favorite, but then I look at like the Hitman's Bodyguard and I'm like, okay, Ryan Reynolds doesn't make a movie flawless.
No, but. No. Six Underground to me was a Deadpool prequel, though. So. I mean, that's okay. what it felt like to me.
I'll buy that, yeah. But this had substance, though, Lou. I would say this yeah. is definitely a better movie than Six Underground. Now, whether you're going to like it as well or not, I don't know. But
okay. Well, it's on Netflix. So I'm going to give it a shot. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the thing we haven't mentioned here with this is that the directors are the Russo brothers.
Yeah.
Right.
So Joan Anthony Russo. And I mean, they brought it. I thought the direction in this was great. So,
yeah. Yeah, I would highly recommend it. If people haven't seen it, if you're listening to our podcast, you fit into a certain demographic for whom this movie was made.
Yes.
Let's face it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend it. Let's see what else. I watched Luck this past week with my son when we ran out of other things to watch. It looks like a Pixar movie. It's not. Trying to think of who does it. Skydance? I think it's Skydance.
I think it's Skydance, yeah.
Yeah. And they made it for Apple TV. And it was good. It had a good story to it.
I got about a half hour in before I got sidetracked. Something else I had to stop. But
yeah,
it started out good. I mean, it felt fun.
It's not going to be a classic Toy Story sort of thing. But it was much better. Once again, it was much better than a lot of the competing films like it that have come out recently. I thought it had a lot of heart. The characters were interesting. The plot was good. The pacing was good. The story moved along. It wasn't overly sappy, and yet it had some heart to it. I liked it. Definitely a kid's movie. Somewhat predictable, but not so predictable that you knew everything that was going to happen. So, yeah, if you're looking for a good animated family movie, this is something, it's a little bit different than what you normally get. So, and it kind of had that other world, like other dimensional thing, like Monsters, Inc. and Inside Out going on. So, it was fun.
Okay.
Light and Magic. Going to jump to another one on the list here that I think you guys have at least seen some of. So I think that the three of us over the various decades have seen more than our share of Star Wars documentaries, whether it be about George Lucas, whether it be about the making of the film, whether it be about the story of the film, etc. And of course, most of those documentaries include some element about ILM. ILM was founded as a result of George working on Star Wars, and then it has grown into, this is back when they did not have visual art production houses.
Right.
And then it kind of started that side of the industry in that way. And then it became the juggernaut of filmmaking. And I went into this is a series on Disney Plus. I forget how many episodes there are. I want to say there are at least six.
I think it's six.
Okay. I've only seen maybe the first two or three. I think I've seen the first three. And I went in confident that I've seen 90% of the footage because I've seen so many things. Oh, yeah. It was exciting. I was
explaining the making of Star Wars things that came on the DVDs and
all of them. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and they're always fighting to try to find some extra footage you haven't seen before, to include that little 10% that's new. And so after you've watched all of them, like, you've seen all there is to see, right? And it was cool because I was sitting there telling my son, hey, that guy there, Lauren Peterson, yeah, I've had dinner with him a couple of times. Like, really? I'm like, yeah, it was pretty cool. So, you know, I got to be the impressive dad there for a few minutes. Nice. That was fun. But anyway, this documentary, I don't know about you guys, but the vast majority of this footage I've never seen before.
Same. Yeah. There is a lot of familiar stuff that we have seen from all those making of documentaries, mostly of Star Wars, but a few other things like Jurassic Park, which comes later in the series and some other things.
Raiders.
Raiders. Yeah. A lot of that. But it was, I think a big thing was the perspective of it? Well, obviously, like right. the first four episodes by far talk more about Star Wars than anything else. But that makes sense because ILM was built literally for Star Wars.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, that's what they did. And then it was kind of the, all right, so we finished a Star Wars movie. What do we do for like the next couple of years? Oh, you know what? Right. We'll take some contract work. We'll do some of Steven Spielberg stuff, and we'll do some of James Cameron stuff, and we'll do some of this and some. So we had this. It truly was a documentary of the company, not just the Star Wars stuff. But the Star Wars stuff was really obviously the foundation for it. While there was a lot of familiar footage, there was also a lot of footage that hadn't been seen. There were a lot of really great interviews, really, really great interviews, both done during the time in the 70s and 80s, and obviously up through the 90s and such. But also interviews that were done basically now
for this,
you know, more recently as a retrospective type of thing. And it was, I thought it was great. It was really, really well put together. I liked it. I liked it. I watched the whole thing. I liked it a lot, as did my wife. And I know you guys on Media Chatter have talk a lot about like a lot of the effect stuff and such. And I know that my wife talks a lot about it and things that she talks about in her film class. And so much of this, she's like, I wish I could get this on, that I could get this for some of my film classes, to show, because just of the amount of stuff, the sheer volume and how they explain things and the things that they show and the progress of things, it just fantastic.
Hmm. I mean, as a documentary, it was a very well done, very high budget documentary. I mean it wasn't just grab shots here and there and two guys talking over a cup of coffee without good production values. It was everything about this was done really, really well.
It was produced by was it Lawrence Kasdan?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was. Yep.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was good stuff. What I really liked about it, you said, Tim, we've seen, you know, familiar footage and stuff in there, but a lot of it was, I felt like it was maybe 10% of the footage. If you look at the actual time codes for the documentary, now I'm not talking about 10% of the movie footage, but if you look at the fact that this was footage of interviews, this is footage of group photos and the buildings and the machinery and stuff like that. And then you look at the parts that we've actually seen before, you know, the stop motion on the AT-ATs and, the compositing of the trench run on the Death Star, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. We've seen those things before, but that made up a very small amount of what this was about. We're talking about them creating the motion tracking system for the camera, them talking about why it mattered and all of the different layering that they would do with each pass and why that mattered. And then how, like, they're actually showing the machines of how it puts that stuff together. It's showing how matte paintings work, and it's showing you shots with and without the matte paintings, which is stuff that we've almost never seen before. And the few, very, very few times we have, not to this degree by far.
Yep.
And we're talking about some of the interpersonal dynamics between the different people involved. We're not just seeing like one or two people. It's not just Dennis Muren and Doug Chang for an hour.
Yeah.
Like we're seeing 20 or 30 different people. We're seeing Phil Tippett, George Lucas trying to fire the guy running ILM after he comes back from the UK and saying, you just blew through 2/3 of my budget and you have a single shot done? That's it. The movie's releasing in a few months. Them shouting at each other and somebody actually having to go stand in between the two of them physically.
Yeah.
It was, and then Phil Tippett not getting included in when they went to go to The Empire Strikes Back, and like all of these
never
dynamics and stuff behind the scenes are stuff that people don't know about.
Yeah.
About how basically this movie almost didn't get made.
Yeah.
And for a number of different reasons, not just this, but this was one of the big reasons. And so you get to see that. And they don't really pull many punches with what they cover in that regard, at least for the first couple of episodes.
And the innovation of everything did. I mean, that's really the big story. Because like you said, Eric, effects houses didn't exist before ILM.
Right.
And that was the thing. To bring together the people with all these different skill sets. They literally built their own movie cameras because the stuff that was out then wasn't meeting their needs.
Right.
So they got right. older movie cameras, tore them apart, rebuilt them in a way that no one was using movie cameras now, and using them to get this stuff done. Like, just like mind blowing stuff that, like, wow, these guys rebuilt a movie camera.
Yeah, and their experience okay. going into this was like the shop class they took at at university.
Right, right. You know, one of the things that kind of made a parallel in my mind to this was the Xerox Park, the Palo Alto Research Center, where they said, okay, get some really smart guys, put them together and make stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't do anything with it. The difference was, you know, ILM, George was like, okay, I need to keep these guys together. So let me have them do projects for all my friends.
Right.
Yep.
And then they'll still be together when I get my next movie done in a couple of years.
Yeah.
But it was all this stuff that, like Tim said, brand new technology, brand new, we got to figure out a way to do motion capture. We got to figure out a way to do, you know, this before this is the thing. It's like today you think about, you know, we do it on our computers at home, you know, 15-year-olds and 12-year-olds are doing stuff that these guys wouldn't even dream of back then. But then it was like, we can do this.
Yeah. Know? They were disassembling these big cameras to move to the new location for Empire Strikes Back and stuff like that. And then they realized, wait a minute, we don't remember how it went back together.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think another great thing about it is the innovation wasn't a one-time thing.
Right.
Every film that they worked on required something new that no one else had ever done before.
Right.
And so then when you use it on, you know, movie D, then suddenly on movie F, you're using that same technology now, but then you're amping it up again. So it was this like constant improvement of everything. Absolutely.
It was
everything.
Amazing that where they had one movie that, you know, this is brand new cutting edge stuff. The next movie, it's like, oh yeah, we just did it all the time.
Yeah,
it was like, you know, they went from 0 to 60, not knowing how to get there. And all of a sudden, now it's everyday occurrences, you know? And the one that got me was and Eric, this may be a spoiler for you, but you may know it too. At the end of the series, when they're doing the whole thing with CGI stuff for Jurassic Park,
don't tell me who dies.
I won't,
because
one guy's eaten by the dinosaur. But you know, it was like they were planning on doing this all with maquettes and stop motion and puppets,
right?
And in their free time, these guys are like, no, we can do this digitally.
Yeah.
And they were told not to.
Right, right.
Like, yeah, don't. That's don't the do thing. That, they're like, you know what? Yeah. Don't even waste your time on it. We're gonna use the stuff that we know. And these guys are like, yeah, no, we're pretty sure like we can do this mind blowing stuff. And then it's so funny, like they're talking about like how long it's taking for computers to render like a second and a half movement. That now it would be done, you know, like
now
that.
You can literally do it in real time on your laptop. I have software you can do it with. Yeah.
Just it, truly, absolutely amazing the stuff they did. And it revolutionized all of filmmaking. I mean, first of all, ILM, like I said, it's not just Star Wars. ILM has done, you know, movie productions that a lot of people never even expect them to be in. But in a lot of cases, if there's a special effect, I mean, they are still the go-to effects house for things. And even if it's something that they're not doing, every other effects house owes ILM their existence.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, it's basically someone else saying, oh, you know what, look at what they're doing. I think we should try to do stuff like that. And it's just, you know, and then all these like benchmark advancements in the filmmaking industry, ever since the late 70s has come from ILM.
Yeah. I have a quick correction. I think I might have said Phil Tippett, who, if I remember correctly, also worked with some of the stop motion stuff and the maquettes and did the Dejarik hollow chest thing. He was not the one George was going to fire. It was John Dykstra.
Yeah.
I got the names messed up. I just wanted to clarify that. And all due respect to both guys, but John Dykstra was the one who was the head of ILM and made the Dykstra. Was it the Dykstra cam?
Yes.
I think
that
was the one that couldn't, the other guys couldn't figure out like, how did he put this thing together again? And it was an absolutely fascinating documentary. And my son saw the little thumbnail for it on Disney Plus, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to put him to sleep so fast. So I put it on, and I'd already watched like half of the first episode when he wanted to watch it, and he wanted to just binge through the whole thing. He loved it. He
was
absolutely fascinated by how they came up with the ideas for all of these different things. So
I
hope we're conveying how good a documentary series this was.
Yeah. One thing I was surprised they didn't mention, because it's this little fun fact that I learned when I got to tour ILM, is that the matte paintings are done on glass shower doors.
Yeah.
And they didn't mention that in the documentary. And I'm like, and they talked so much about the matte paintings and they even showed like the rack that they're pulling them off of. And I'm like, it's all shower doors. Every single one of them are glass shower doors that they go to the hardware store down the road and they buy them. And it just this weird thing, because it's the right size. It's the right dimension. They can paint on, they have to paint on something that's transparent, because that's the whole purpose of the matte painting.
Yeah. It was really interesting. And that's the funny thing too. There were things that they left out. They talked about when they went to the snow speeders on Hoth, how they couldn't have, like, you have matte lines when you're doing compositing, and when you're out in space, it's not that big a deal because it's black lines and
black.
It's a black of space. And now you've got white background. And I thought, oh, they're going to talk about how they kind of had to fade the transparency
windows.
And you can actually see some of the background through the side paneling of the snow speeders when you're in the cockpit scenes and stuff, until the special editions where they fixed it up. And they didn't get into that. They didn't really explain all that. But I guess that sort of stuff, it's okay because that's explained elsewhere. So in hindsight, like, I was looking forward to explaining that to my son, because my son's like really interested in filmmaking now, not because of this, but in general. And I was going to explain that to him, and it didn't come up. But in hindsight, I think it's better, because you can still find those explanations of things in various other, you know, the making of the special edition documentaries and stuff like that. But this is stuff we haven't seen before, for the most part.
Yeah.
It was fascinating.
Really good stuff. Great documentary. Highly recommend.
All right, moving on. We might just lightning round through some of the rest of this stuff. Have you guys been keeping up with Westworld? Lou, I know you watched the series, but you're behind.
I am. I'm behind. I'm only on like episode 3 of this last season.
Okay, so this is season 4. I just watched the finale. I think it was last night. And season 3 was a bit confusing. It was kind of here and there and everywhere. And it wasn't until the end where you kind of figured out what was going on. And even then, you weren't fully sure you understood it. Season 4... You start out, you're keeping up. It's not that it's confusing. You just don't know why things matter yet. And about halfway through season 4, things hit the fan and everything makes sense. And then you're like, holy crap, they went there with it? And then it just gets, the stakes get higher and higher and higher. And by the end, it's just, you're sitting there like, wow, that was...
I'm looking forward to finishing the season. I mean, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I'm looking forward to even more now. But
yeah,
the series production values are fantastic.
Oh my gosh.
Do such a good job with it. The actors are great.
Mm-hmm.
The storylines have been good, even though they're confusing sometimes. They've been good storylines, and it keeps you on your toes. It's not just, okay, I know where they're going. It's going to be this, and it's not.
You definitely don't know where they're going at the end of season 4, all through the last like 2 or 3 episodes especially. And you might not even like it, but you have to respect that they're pushing the bar. They're doing something different. It's unexpected. And it definitely ups the stakes. It gets kind of epic. And I was impressed. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. But it's certainly impressive. And I enjoyed it. I know there will be people who won't enjoy it, because they will be so invested that because things went in a direction other than what they wanted, they're probably upset about it. But hey, we're Star Wars fans. We're used to that. We can handle that. So Westworld, HBO Max, season 4, really, really good. If you got through season 3 and you kind of gave up on it, I would recommend, you know, you're already that far into it, pick up season 4. It's much better than 3 was. And it makes having sat through season 3 to get here definitely worth it, in my opinion. Nice. You guys watch I Am Groot?
Oh, yeah.
I just watched this weekend, yeah.
Thoughts? In a nutshell?
A lot of fun.
It was cute.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. I like the stories that they did. I appreciated the fact that, like, for the most part, and of course they said, you know, it's they're animated shorts is what they are. And really, for the most part, we got the group that we get in the movies. So
my son was a little surprised that they went as dark as they did with a couple of them.
Oh, they, yeah. It was like, you know, squishing civilizations and
somebody got spaced. Aliens. Yeah, I thought it was blue immediately.
Yeah. I was rooting for him in that one.
Yeah.
It was good. The, which something has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the production, of these. I was a little annoyed by the fact that they didn't come out as a thing that was composed of episodes. Therefore, right. I could turn it on and it would just go from episode one to episode two to episode three. No, you have to go back to the selection screen and then select the next one like it was an individual show.
They're like just little five-minute movies.
Yeah, I don't know why Disney Plus chose to release it like that.
But. So they did it in the same way they did the Simpsons shorts and the same way that they do all of the Disney, the old classic Disney shorts. By the way, if you haven't checked those out, I don't care what generation you're from, you might want to check some of them out. The old Disney stuff is good. But even with the old Disney stuff, it would be nice to have it contained. If I'm going to watch a 5-minute Goofy short, like how to play football or how to set up your home theater or, you know, some of those classics, I want to see a bunch of them all at once. Don't make me
hop
through
2 minutes getting back to it again to watch it again. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Especially give it to me in one 3-minute, 4-minute show. Right. And Tim, I got to say one thing I got to fault you for there. You're being very generous calling them stories because there really isn't much of a story there.
Yeah. I mean, they're just little vignettes.
I agree with that.
Liked they're just little vignettes. I thought they were good.
A couple of them were good. The rest were fine.
Yeah.
Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation.
I was going to ask if you guys got to see the promo or ad for the Galactic Star Cruiser experience.
Yes. Done in Lego. Yeah.
I really wish they would shorten their commercial breaks. Did not want to sit through a 30-minute commercial break, but I mean, I've got Hulu. I guess I'm used to it.
I thought the story that they gave us was cute.
Which one?
It wasn't outstanding, but it was fun, and I like what Lego does with the characters. And
Tim. Are they paying you? Is that what's going on? Is Disney like? Are you getting a paycheck we're not getting? Is that what this is?
I saw a Lego truck back up to Tim's house earlier.
Right.
I cannot confirm or deny that. I'm not looking for deep story out of these things. So I just kind of sit back and I enjoy it and I chuckle and that's cute. They did this with it.
I chuckled. I thought there's some funny stuff there, but at least three times it took me so far out of the story. I'm going, this is just an ad for the friggin' hotel.
And Batu. Really? Yeah.
Yeah, not as much there, but definitely for the
hotel.
The Halcyon Star Cruiser. I'm like, I get it, but okay.
And it was like, the stories just weren't that. The beach thing with Vader and the Emperor was cute for, I'm going to say there were like maybe 18 seconds worth of it.
Oh, come on. That was a funny
maybe skit. 22 seconds. You're right. I may be being a little too harsh. I have to say, I love Weird Al.
Sure, we're in.
I am a fan of both Weird Al's music and him as a person. And so I thought, at least you get a Weird Al song out of it, right? And you can get the single and stuff. And then I'm listening to it and it's like, oh my gosh, I could have written this. I know grade school kids who could have written this. This must be just like some snippets from the song or something. Like maybe the whole song is better. And I didn't listen because I was scared to find out. But all due respect to Weird Al. I love Weird Al. But it was just bad. I did not like this overall. My son didn't like it overall. My son's a Lego fan and he likes the Star Wars Lego stuff. What he's seen of them. Did not like this. I didn't like the last one they did either, the Halloween thing. Like, it was not as bad as this, but
I will say they have deviated some from kind of the way that they used to do storytelling with these. And I think what they used to do was better, but I still enjoy them.
I'm glad. I want people to enjoy them. You know, well, for real, even just because I don't like something doesn't mean I don't want others to like it. Like, I want Disney Plus and Lucasfilm and Star Wars as a franchise to be successful. And I want people to like what's put out. But I did not in this case. I think that the Lego stuff recently, the writing has been abysmal. I think they need to go back to... They used to have really good writing, like the Freemaker... was it Freemaker Chronicles or Freemaker Tales or whatever it was?
Yeah.
I didn't see all of those, but what I saw of them were good. A lot of the other Lego things they had done were good. The holiday special they did after episode, was it 7 or was it after episode 9? The one that focused on Rey and all that was okay. That was pretty good. Everything since then has been, I think, completely disposable.
Yeah, but, I'll agree with that.
But I'm glad people enjoyed it. Speaking of train wrecks, I watched Trainwreck, Woodstock 99. We've talked a little bit about the Woodstock 99 event before in Random Chatter because there's another documentary that came out, I think it was maybe last year.
Yeah,
early last
year.
On HBO. Yeah. Yep. And Tim, you were able to give your own personal perspective from having been there in person as a responder. So this is on Netflix, I think it was. And it just came out a couple weeks ago. Did you see it, Tim?
Not yet. Okay. I did watch the HBO one, which I thought was overall pretty good. This one is, 3 episodes? Did you watch it, Eric?
It was either 2 or 3 episodes. I think about an hour apiece.
I've not watched it yet, but I am looking forward to watching it. It's one of those things. There's a few things that compel me for it. One that, you know, like you said, I was part of the public safety team on this. It's also very local to me. New York, where this all occurred, is 20 minutes away from where I live. There's also, when these things come out, in fact, there was an article written actually by a friend of mine who's a reporter in the local paper about this. So, like, whenever anything happens with Woodstock, it's always in the local news here. It's interesting. It's interesting. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, I would say that it's good in the sense that it adds a little bit that the HBO documentary didn't have. But if you were going to compare the two documentaries, I feel like the HBO one was probably more comprehensive, probably a better description of what the problem was, and a much better, in my personal opinion, a much better description of the consequences. The HBO one covered multiple different aspects of what went wrong as far as the consequences and the results of it. And of those, it focused more on some of the assaults that the women had to go through more so than the Netflix one did. The Netflix one mentioned it in passing a couple of times. And I kind of felt like after realizing how severe it was watching the HBO one, which was not overly graphic or anything. Don't get me wrong. Like it was, it was reporting. It wasn't depictions. Yep. But I really felt like they did a disservice by, I don't want to say glossing over it, but not really giving it the type of focus it deserved. And there were a couple of other things I think the HBO documentary focused on a little bit better to give people an understanding of the scope of everything that went wrong. I think the Netflix one dialed into some specific things a little bit more heavily, which was good because that's a perspective that HBO didn't have in turn. So I think watching both of them is really good because you get a bigger sense of the picture. But if you had to choose just one or the other, I'd say the HBO one. While this one was good, I think that one was better.
Okay.
So
good. Good to know. Quick little interjection here, since we talked about it a little while ago. House of the Dragon, the premiere on HBO, drew nearly 10 million viewers, which is HBO's largest series premiere ever.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. That's okay. Impressive.
Yeah. It's also impressive that HBO gives us numbers when Netflix doesn't. Netflix did not even give the Russo brothers the numbers for The Gray Man.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, that's a really good opening. I'm glad it went well. The only other things I've watched, my son, when he was here at the beginning of the summer, discovered Man vs. Bee, the Rowan Atkinson series that was on Netflix, which I thought was pretty good. And then through scrolling through HBO for, I think it was Doctor Who, or it might have been something else, he saw, wait a minute, that's the guy from, is Mr. Bean the same guy from Man vs. Bee? Yeah. I said, yeah. And he binge watched, he didn't see it until late in his vacation, but he binge watched as much as he could of Mr. Bean, like the classic Mr. Bean episodes, and is obsessed with Mr. Bean now. So, talked to a friend of mine in the UK, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you'll be proud of my son. Oh, really? He said, yeah, he seems to like Rowan Atkinson. Oh, Rowan Atkinson's amazing! I said, yeah, he's a Mr. Bean fan. Oh, that's horrible. So what do you mean it's horrible? Oh, yeah. Mr. Bean. Oh, no, Rowan Atkinson is so much better than that. And I said, well, Mr. Bean's not bad. He said, no, that's like 13-year-old... Oh, he's a 13-year-old boy. Okay, well, yeah, I guess it makes sense then. Okay, yeah, I get it. But I don't know. It's good slapstick. It's clever. And, I mean, you got to keep in mind it's from, like, back in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. So it still aged pretty well, though. BBC, low production value. I know Tim is not a Mr. Bean fan.
Yeah, I'm not.
I am not.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a brand of comedy I do not subscribe to. Thank you very much.
I will say Rowan Atkinson, though, even if you don't like Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson is a highly intelligent, highly underrated entertainer. He's very, very good. He has some brilliant stand-up comedy specials. You've got the Mr. Bean movie. You've got the Johnny English movies. I get it. Those were not good. But he's got some really good stand-up stuff. So, and some other things he's done that's really good. Anybody else have anything else to cover? Tim, you've got a couple of things in the list here, right?
Yeah, a couple things. So there is a summer series of BattleBots going on called BattleBots Champions. The premise of this is that it's a... kind of a multi-sequence tournament as they are fighting for the golden bolt is the prize here, as opposed to the giant nut, which is the prize during their regular seasons. This is the golden bolt.
Together if you win them both? It looks like they
proportionally look to be about the right size. So what this is, I think it's, each episode is a kind of a mini tournament of, I believe, and it's either 8 or 10, bots that they start off with, and then they get down to facing, who they're calling the gatekeeper, for that particular branch of the tournament tree. And so then you have one winner at the end of that. And so we're going through several episodes of this. And then in the end, I think we're then going to have like 10 competitors for the golden bolt. So then it'll then go down through its own structure there. Some really, really good fights, with a lot of our favorite bots. And of course, the cast and crew are all the same there. So
is it like BattleBots Bounty Hunters in that regard? That it's kind of, or are they all like well-known bots that are all?
Most are well-known bots. There's a couple of like rookies that they've brought in, but most are well-known bots, and some very surprising fights. Some very, very surprising fights.
Hmm.
So, and yes, it is like a Bounty Hunters type thing that for you to advance, and they apparently they do shoot one of these things in a day. And so if you win, you know, you're going through whatever it is, 4 matches in a day, just sequentially. So like you have to get your bot repaired and everything. It's I can't imagine being those pit crews to have to do that, but
that would be frustrating to win a really difficult match and then go into the next one with your bot falling apart and not able to get anywhere with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Resident Alien is back. They've been a couple episodes of that out, and that's that just it continues to be fun. I'm really enjoying it. That.
So it's still good. It's holding up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It totally is.
That's good.
And then lastly, The Princess, which is a Hulu movie. It stars Joey King and Olga Kurylenko. It's fantastic. It is an action movie. It definitely like R-rated type thing. It's funny. It doesn't take itself seriously, and it's almost like a John Wick set in like a medieval time type of thing in terms of like really awesome fight sequences, but also stuff that no one in the world could survive. Cause we all know like John Wick could not survive the stuff that he does. And so it's kind of the same thing. I mean, Joey King, who is the princess in this, and you know, she takes a beating and keeps on ticking. You know, she gets through it, but it's awesome. And there's gratuitous violence to the extent of again, kind of like a John Wick thing. With all the suitable blood and gore that goes with it. And it's tongue in cheek, but it's good. And it's not a deep story. But it's fun. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah. I hadn't even heard about it. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good time.
All right. Anything else you want to throw in before we, close up shop for the night?
That's all I got.
Nope. I'm good.
All right. Quick shout out to Diablo 3 players. The new season starts Friday. Looking forward to that. Totally addicted to it now again. So, all right. Well, that's going to do it then for this episode of Random Chatter. I know we had a lot of stuff to cover, but thank you for spending your time with us. And hopefully you were able to pick something out that maybe you want to go check out. Or if there are things you have already checked out and you would like to give us your feedback or comments on it, let us know. You can email us, randomchatter@randomchatter.com, or because I know nobody really does email anymore, you can hop into Discord. Go to randomchatter.com/Discord and join our community. We would love to have you there. Lots of great discussions going on, whether it's Star Wars, MCU, DCU. Hopefully, you know, I'm really looking forward to Doctor Who coming back. Been rewatching some of those episodes. That's going to be coming back, I think, Christmas time, and a new season, bringing back one of the old showrunners. So we're going to have discussions going on for that. All kinds of different franchises. Whatever is going on television right now, or in the theaters, or just in day-to-day lives, we typically have conversations going on about it. In fact, that reminds me, guys, we have to set up a channel for House of the Dragon.
Oh, yes, we do.
If somebody hasn't already, we need to get that set up because I know people are wanting to talk about that. There are going to be spoilers, but we keep things in channels designated as spoiler channels. So if you've seen it, you can go talk about it with other people who've seen it without having to worry about ruining it for anybody else. So once again, randomchatter.com/Discord. Come hang out with us. We would love to see you there. And otherwise, we will be back in another week with more stuff to talk about. Until then, take care.